ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் ஸ்டேட் ஆஃப் சர்ச் ஃபேசிங் சேலஞ்சஸ் பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Getting ready to depart for Australia and New Zealand for our inner search program. Palani Swami, Sarkandandapani and I are leaving tomorrow. Saravananda Swami, Natyam Jivananda and Sarakanilakanta are leaving the next day. So we won't be here on January 5th. For Gurudeva's Jayanti Guru Puja. So as some of you will recall, every year on Gurudeva's Jayanti Guru Puja, I give what's called the State of the Church talk, a short talk which just mentions a few of our goals for the coming year. So I thought I'd give that this morning so we don't miss it. So here we go. In the membership area, we will be finishing up the special study course of preparation for Vishesha Diksha, which we started last year. We will then be able to give Vishesha Diksha to members who complete the course, starting either later this year or early next. In the publication area for the Saivite Hindu Religion course, Book 4 is done, except for the French translation, which we will be receiving soon and then sending Book 4 off to the printers. It is the first Saivite Hindu religion course to include color paintings and photographs, and is quite impressive. The revised artwork for Books 1 and 2 from Manivale in Chennai will be completed soon, and then we can print new editions of those as well. Book 5 of the children's course is already underway in English, so we're making good progress in that area. Our Malaysian printer is about to begin printing a Lemurian Scrolls color edition, which utilizes the new color paintings of our Balinese artist, Ai Wayan, and will provide a major upgrade to this text. By the way, never say Ai Wayan in a crowd, because it just means the first son. So about one-third of the men will turn around if you say Ai Wayan. First son. Hinduism Today magazine will be formally launching a digital edition by April 1st, 2006. Though we have had an HTML version of the magazine on the web for many years, it lacks the color photos and attractive layouts of the print edition. The new digital edition will provide all of that, plus additional features not contained in the print edition, such as rich media, audio, and video files. Articles and ads will also contain links to websites, which can be conveniently accessed if you are connected to the internet when reading the digital edition. There is no charge for the digital edition, and our hope is that it will become quite popular among Hindu youth and children. In the realm of inner search and retreat programs, we depart tomorrow for our two-week Australia-New Zealand inner search program with some 46 participants. It is followed by 11 additional days of temple talks, half-day seminars, and attending the 10th World Saiva Conference, where we will be giving the keynote address. Additional seminars for later in the year are a one-day program in Malaysia, two-day program in Singapore, and a 2 or 3 day program in Mauritius. An important aspect of our seminar presentations are the digital keynote presentations, which we have found to be quite effective in helping the participants stay concentrated on the topics and therefore absorb more of the material. As to travel, we have a September trip to Malaysia and Singapore and a December trip to Mauritius already scheduled. We tentatively have a trip to Toronto scheduled in April for the celebration of Yogaswami's Mahasamadhi Day. The date for our journey to California is the weekend of October 14th and 15th, which will repeat last year's pattern of the 14th being a donor reception in San Diego and the 15th a donor reception in Sausalito. Invitations for 2006 Kumbhabhishekams are already starting to arrive. The Montreal Murugan Temple has rescheduled their Kumbhabhishekam for the weekend of May 28th, and the San Antonio Ardhanarishvara Temple is scheduled for May 6th and 7th. Additionally, we are planning to attend the annual festival of the Mahaganapati Temple in Edmonton, Canada, the first weekend of July, and the Maryland Murugan Temple's Nallur Kataragama Festival on May 12th and 13th. Is that enough? Don't need any more invitations. On the Adinam property, the main activity continues to be the Iravan Temple jointing. The West Chinnagopuram will be completed, and then work will shift to fitting the pillars, beams, and ceiling stones. A capital and endowment fundraising campaign, which has the goal of raising $13.6 million in 6 years, will be continued. This is being coordinated by Devarajan with the help of Isan Katir, Dr. Sean Sundar, and K. Suryakumar. We will also continue to develop our 400-acre parcel across the river, Himalayan Acres, mainly by planting additional trees for fences, windbreaks, and fruit production. Our plans for 2006 include additional ironwoods for windbreaks, noni trees, which have shown themselves to grow quite well, and trial plantings of broadleaf mahogany trees for those who are agriculturally oriented. So those are just some of our plans for the coming year. You get a sense. This can be a very dynamic year. We're particularly focused on digital, the digital world. For many years, we've used our computers, which are digital, to produce printed publications, in which we've reached a very high standard for our books as well as our magazine. You know, around the world, we always get praised for the quality of our publications, and of course, what is it called? Plagiarism is the greatest form of flattery, something like that. Anyway, our material gets used quite a bit around the world, and those who are knowledgeable in Hindu publications really respect it. So what is different now is we're going to turn the same tools, our computers, toward the area of producing digital publications. In other words, it never gets printed. It always stays in digital form. So we had good success last year with our keynote presentations. These are the similar to PowerPoint, but it has a little more bells and whistles, as they say, a little more abilities. And so we use it during seminars. The projection goes up on the screen, and then I read along with it other material. And we found it quite effective in holding the attention of the group, as I said. And in fact, in Singapore, I was very impressed. The second of 2 days, and we were running late. You know, we're supposed to stop around 5, and everyone agreed to stay till 6. So here it was 5:30 at night, you know, on the second day of a seminar, and you'd expect everyone to be yawning and, you know, not very attentive. But everyone was focused right on the screen. I was watching, you know, very carefully. They were totally alert. And it showed to me how easy it is for people to keep their attention high when there's something on the screen to watch, and you're just not listening to a speaker talk and talk and talk, but you actually see things and see the points on the screen. And it really is an effective way of conveying information in seminar format. So we're developing lots of material in that regard. We're working on a series which is coming out of the next publisher's desk, which is, you've heard the talk, Spiritualizing Daily Life, which goes through six common challenges we face in life, such as being mistreated and how we respond to that or getting emotionally upset. And it goes through six opportunities to serve, to help others, such as volunteering, and starts off with striving to see God in everyone we meet, and, you know, praising people and expressing appreciation. So it develops 12 points altogether, and it's in response to the constant theme, you know, Sadakadandapani, and I almost laugh sometimes when someone says that we have to be careful because, you know, like about every third person I meet in the Gurupeetam says the same thing, you know, and it's amazing. So it goes something like this, you know, oh, we're so busy, you know, with our professional jobs and raising our children and all. We don't have any time for our spiritual life, you know, and we're just so sorry we don't have more time. So every third person I meet, you know, says that. And so, of course, we wrote an editorial on it, Work is Worship, you know, to try and address that problem. But I can tell that, you know, it addresses the problem. Everyone says yes, but doesn't change what anyone is doing, you know. I get a nice big yes. Oh, yes, Work is Worship. But nothing happens beyond that. So, of course, we need more beyond that. So this is trying to bridge the gap by making it very specific. You know, giving 12 specific items you can check off on a check-off list. You know, when I was at work today, when I was at school today, did I do these 12 things or not? Very practical. And so the idea is, and some people are surprised to hear it, that no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, if we do it in the right spirit, we make spiritual progress from it. If we do it in the wrong spirit, we don't make any progress, or we set ourselves back, depending on exactly what we do. But spiritual progress can happen 24 hours a day. Even in our dreams, we can make spiritual progress if we know how to do it. We won't go into that one this morning. That's a little esoteric, but let's just take our waking hours, you know, all 16 of our waking hours, whatever it is, all 16 hours during the day, we can make spiritual progress during all 16 of them if we simply think about it. So this starts out as a pub desk in the April issue. You'll see it then, and of course you've heard it, most of you. We're taking it on the inner surge to further develop it, get more real-life examples from those of you who actually live in the world. Not just from monks. Get real live examples of these situations and other situations that might even be added to the list, be discussed. And we have a grading sheet. Maximum possible points is 100. So it's a way of, you take these 12 questions, and if you do them all the time, you get 8. So 8 times 12 is 96. And then if you do one of them all the time, or most of the time, you get 4 extra points, because to bring it up to 100. So if you strive to see God in everyone you meet, always or usually you get the 4 bonus points, because that's the most important practice. So you can actually grade yourself if you want to. The idea is once a month you grade yourself and see how well you're doing. And if, like over a year's time, you compare the grade now with a year in the future, you should see some progress. That's the idea. And it's particularly useful for parents to train their children, you know, because it's just not thought about, you know, that when the child comes home, you never ask the child, you know, how much spiritual progress did you make at school today? That question's not asked, right? But it should be, you know, because you want to train the child to think that way, even, you know, in the first grade. Can do simple things, you know, volunteer, be kind to new people in the class. You know, simple things that you can do at any age which train you. So when you're older, you're constantly thinking in this regard of, you know, taking advantage of all the opportunities to help other people that come your way and reacting to life in a disciplined way, so we make progress. So I think we've got it down to earth here. We've got it grounded in something that parents can even teach young children, which is the real test. You know, can it be taught at that level and actually accomplish something? So that's the idea, and then we want to turn it into a seminar with keynote for later in the year. It'll be our probably our two-day seminar in Singapore and our two- or three-day seminar in Mauritius will be on this material. And I think, you know, could have broad appeal when it's understood, the whole idea of spiritualizing daily life, making the maximum spiritual progress you can every day of your life, starting out with 16 hours a day, all your waking hours. You know, it's a very simple concept, and it gets around this problem that we have no time for our spiritual life by pointing out that spiritual life is how you react to wherever you are, whatever you're doing. That's spiritual life if you react the right way. You know, there's opportunities all day long to make spiritual progress, no matter if we're at work, we're at school, we're at home, we're volunteering somewhere, we're shopping. It makes no difference. We can make spiritual progress in all of those environments if we give it some thought. So we're interested in that. I think it feels a good need of trying to make it practical, because it's not happening. You know, in the Hindu temples in the United States, you know, most of the teachings that are given are not practical as far as we know. They don't apply outside of the temple. The children and youth don't know what to do to make spiritual progress if they're not at the temple or in the shrine room or meditating. Nothing's been explained outside of those situations. They have no clue at school what they can do to make spiritual progress, which is where most of their time is, and their homework. How to do homework to make spiritual progress. You know, the basic idea is, you know, Guru Devas says, you know, try and do your best on everything, which means homework. You know, if you try and do your best on every piece of homework, use your concentration, use your willpower, do the best you can. That's strengthening concentration and willpower. And those same abilities are there when we sit to meditate. It's not a different set of concentration and willpower that applies. If we can't concentrate when we meditate, it means we haven't learned to concentrate when we work. It means we didn't learn to concentrate that well in school. But it all ties together. It's only one power of concentration, one willpower, no matter if it's applied to an external task or an internal task. It's the same ability. So it's easier to apply it to an external task because we can see the results. It's pretty hard to see what's going on inside of us. But we can see, you know, we did our best. We got a good grade on our project and we really strove as hard as we could. That's what we want to see. And then otherwise, in the digital realm, as we mentioned, Hinduism today is being developed. Of course, we have what we call a beta version, a preliminary version, is already available from HinduismToday.com, the URL. But we're going to further refine it and release it on or before April 1st is our goal. And we're hoping it'll be popular, that particularly, you know, youth, college youth in the USA will tell one another, like there's a Hindu Students Council, for example, thousands of very bright young Hindus in the Hindu Students Council, and work is spread through this group, and they could all take a look, you know, and be inspired by it. Because it'll have all the graphic beauty of the printed edition right on the screen. It looks just like the printed magazine. And plus, we're going to add rich media, audio and video files. So fairly unambitious projects to start with, like we want to put my publisher's desk in audio video format so you can watch it as well as just read it. And we want to try and get some video, like from we recently gathered the material for an article on Tiruvannamalai for Kritika Deepa, the bonfire on top of the hill, the major festival there. So I want to get some of the video from that in the magazine as well and give it extra life and appeal. So some simple things to start, but later on it could be quite sophisticated. Has lots of potential. And it's free, so people can access it for free, though they can leave a donation if they want to after reading it. Help us out with the expenses, but it's not required. So we're hoping it'll really distribute Hinduism today in a very free-flowing way around the world, places where the printed publication couldn't reach or would be exorbitantly expensive in the local economic terms. So, and you know, in the future, it could even go into foreign languages, the digital version, because there's no print run. All you need is the funds available to translate it. It could be translated into various Indian languages. There was enough interest in the whole project and increased the distribution in a serious way there. Right now, just a simple example is our Hindu Press International news releases, which are just text, you know, sent out, are ending up on Ashta TV in India, and the English goes up on the screen, and then they read it in Hindi. They've translated it into Hindi. So, you know, that's just printed text. So imagine when you get something digital, and what could happen to it? Could end up on Hindu TV programs if once it gets up to a certain standard and a certain length. You know, you'd see part of Hinduism Today on TV every quarter. It'd be very wonderful way to distribute it. So we're very enthusiastic about those two areas and feel it's timely. And the simple vision is that what we used to call television has changed, and it's going to change even more, but I call it the home entertainment center. It's a big screen. We don't even have a television anymore. We project on a screen from cable, from DVDs, and you know, at some point the internet will be coming in as well, and we'll be projecting up on the screen right from the internet. So I call that the home entertainment center of the future, and our goal is for Hinduism Today to be up on that screen, you know, like little 15-minute segments of things could be right up on the screen, you know, downloaded from the internet, and before you turn on the favorite TV program for the evening, you watch 15 minutes of Hinduism Today. No, it's feasible in a few years. Technology is there, and the streaming from the web, I think, you know, it's something that's started out as a pie-in-the-sky idea, but it's come down to being realistic, and give it a few more years, and it'll probably be commonplace where on the home entertainment center, certain things are coming straight off the web, movies and other material. You're not coming from disk, you're coming straight from the web. So that's where we want our material, is on the web and being able to be watched on a home screen like that. So we're taking the first steps with our keynote seminars and our digital HD, and we'll see how it goes. Well, have a wonderful phase. We'll be off tomorrow. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Shivaya. This talk, fourth challenge, is one of the six facing life's challenges that we're developing. And we presented this on the Inner Search, and all the Inner Searchers gave us some feedback, which we've included in this version of the presentation. Fourth challenge, disturbed emotions. When we get upset by life's experiences, we have a choice to suffer the emotional upheaval or to strive to pull ourselves out of it as quickly as possible. Simple way to state the challenge we face is this. Do our emotions control us, or do we control our emotions? Do the experiences we encounter in life determine our state of mind, or do we choose our state of mind independent of our experiences? For example, if some challenges we face during the day upset us, do we stay upset for a few days, or do we quickly gain control of our emotions and rid ourselves of feeling upset? in the practice of facing life's challenges, certainly one of the most important parts of ourselves that we have to deal with is our emotional nature. What are some of the benefits of pulling ourselves as quickly as possible out of emotional upsets caused by life's experiences rather than simply suffering through them? A significant benefit is that we spend less time being unhappy and thus greatly improve the quality of our life. A second benefit is that we increase our overall emotional control and are less prone to other emotions that are self-generated, such as worry and fear. Another benefit relates to our intuition. The deepest insights and solutions come from our superconscious intuition. When we are upset, this faculty is cut off from us because the subconscious mind is disturbed. Quickly controlling the emotion returns our intuitive abilities quickly as well. Certainly, one of the consequences of being seriously upset is that we then tend to disturb the other members of our family. This can lead to unkind words and actions occurring, which results in further unhappiness for all involved. The benefit of not upsetting other family members is certainly an important one. Gurudeva makes an interesting statement about controlling our instinctive nature. His idea is that if you are ever disappointed or discouraged, count it as a blessing. Believe that? He said that. If you are ever disappointed or discouraged, count it as a blessing. Why is this? Anybody know? He explains that it is because we make very little progress when we strive to conquer these baser instincts in a good mood. However, vast strides are possible when we are miserable and work with ourselves to replace our misery with joy and understanding. He goes on to say that you then have the opportunity to conquer the instinctive nature and really stabilize yourself dynamically on the spiritual path. So next time you're disappointed or discouraged, you can remember you're supposed to count it as a blessing. So on the inner search, I ask those present for a list of common causes of emotional disturbance. Here is what they came up with. About 20 items. Children not behaving. Disappointment over self and your performance. Being falsely accused. Seeing someone cheating. Losing control of the situation. Relatives with plans for your life. People you know well. Overwhelmed at work. Taking on too much. Getting frustrated. Others not doing their share. Miscommunication. Jealousy. Someone sidestepping the real issue. Time issues. Stress. Overinterpreting a situation if you have insecurities. Being framed or manipulated. Sounds bad. Loss of money caused by others. Regret over past. Traffic. These are the real things people face. Delays. Bigotry of others. Snobbishness. Losing. Seeing a child mistreated. Quite a list. I also asked the group, what are the obstacles we need to overcome to quickly pull ourselves together when we do get upset? And they came up with 7. Ending up in the state of mind of self-pity. Dwelling on the problem without seeking a solution. The tendency to justify your mistakes, which of course makes it worse. Caught in anger and not able to get out of it. Using the emotion to manipulate another. The desire to retaliate. Next, let's look at some keys to handling disturbed emotions. First key, Certainly, the emotional behavior of our parents plays a dominant role in how we handle our emotions. Did our mother pout for days when she did not get her way? Did our father express anger frequently when faced with something challenging? And so forth. Clearly, we tend to copy our parents' behavior unless we have reflected on it carefully and made a decision not to. Second key, being honest with ourselves as to the state of emotion we are in is necessary. If we won't admit we are upset when we are, that makes it more difficult. Third key, misery enjoys company. A common response to being upset and unhappy is to upset those around us. They have no right to be happy and smiling when I am miserable. This must be given up as well. Fourth key, having actually succeeded a few times in pulling ourselves together quickly convinces us that it can be done and starts to form a new habit pattern for responding to emotional disturbance. And lastly, we have a quote from Gurudeva. It comes out of the Self God. Feel your mind, body, and emotions, and know that you are the effulgent being permeating through mind, which is all form, body, which you inhabit, and emotions that you either control or are controlled by. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you very much for coming along.